Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Georgia United Credit Union. Show your team pride with the Georgia Bulldogs debit card. Check out gucu.org/godogs for more details.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
There is something that's been going on in college football a little bit this year that I find to be kind of annoying. And I think you may see the exact opposite of that seemingly happening at UGA. And I think if you're a dog fan, this ought to be pretty good news. So let me kind of begin this way. There are a couple of coaches lately who, when questioned about some of their decision making, have kind of fired back at the media in a weird way on this. And I'm going to start with one that I think is a pretty egregious example of a coach being pretty arrogant in the face of one of the most gigantic blunders that could ever be made. You don't care about this game, but I'm going to set this up as a way of talking about George, and I think you will like the point that I eventually arrive on, so kind of stay with me for a couple of minutes if you don't mind. The other day, Pitt is playing Penn State, and late in the game, Pitt, down a touchdown, decides to kick a field goal. Now, anyone who's ever played Madden knows what a bad idea that is, because obviously, if you're down 7, you kick a field goal. Even if you make the field goal to go down 4, you still need a touchdown. And it's not going to be any easier to get a touchdown any other point in the game than it is right there when you're down, I'm talking about like deep in the red zone in your opponent's territory. However, Pitt coach Pat Narduzzi, when questioned about this, absolutely gave the stiff arm and said, "Who are any of you to question me about this?" Listen to Narduzzi as a way of, I think, providing an interesting contrast to something you're about to hear from Kirby Smart. Here is the Pitt coach.
Why go for the field goal? Why not go for the touchdown?
Because you need 2 scores to win the football game, unless you guys are playing for overtime, you know, trying to win a football game. So, you know.
Well, you could have gone for 2 also, and then it's a 1-possession game.
Yeah, like I said, we can look back at all the calls, guys. You know, all the armchair quarterbacks, you guys all got those armchair desks, so it's easy to make those decisions.
I mean, this sounds like a coach from like some movie from the 70s, the 80s. All you armchair quarterbacks, I don't care what you think. I'm the guy with the play card in my hand. I'm the head coach, and how dare you question me on anything, even if it's the kind of blunder that a teenager would know the difference in playing some video game. How dare any of you question me? Yes, I kicked a field goal down a touchdown and seemingly wasn't aware that I could have also won the game with a 2-point conversion if I was trying to make this, you know, as simple and easy on me as I could. But no one will dare criticize me. No one will dare question my decision-making. Now, another coach recently was even more intense in his response to the media than that. This is Pat Fitzgerald, the Northwestern coach. Now, the backstory on the Narduzzi thing I knew about because I kind of watched this game. The truth is, I'm not even sure what they're even questioning Pat Fitzgerald about because it's Northwestern football. I don't really care. But, once again, listen to Fitzgerald, the Northwestern coach's response when questioned by the media about his play calling and one of the buzzy catchphrases of the season. It belongs to the Northwestern coach after this.
Does that mean that you're satisfied with the offensive game plan the way it is and you guys just need to execute that game plan better?
Well, we just take 90 hours and play Wii and golf all week. What do you think? Yeah, I go in every game plan expecting it to work, to be quite honest with you. I understand there's 40,000 experts on Twitter that can call plays for me, so my email address is hashtag I don't care. Okay, so shoot that out.
Shoot that out there, he says. Hashtag, I don't care. That's my email address. I don't think that's how the computers work, but nonetheless, that's Fitzgerald's line on that. Now, hear me when I tell you this, that Pat Narduzzi and Pat Fitzgerald are 9-5 Hammond Eggers if there ever were. These are two of the least accomplished coaches you can find in all of college football, and yet when questioned about some of their decision-making, at least in Narduzzi's case, a pretty egregious blunder, the Fitzgerald thing, you can Google that for yourself to find out what they're even upset with him about, but their response is hashtag I don't care, armchair quarterbacks, blah, 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 essentially reaching down deep into the coach's playbook to kind of fire back in any criticism that might come their way. Now, let's talk about Athens, Georgia here for a moment, because if ever there was a coach who's earned the right to say hashtag I don't care, it'd be Georgia coach Kirby Smart, because compared to the two Pats here, Narduzzi and Fitzgerald, and by the way, both those lines have come within the last couple of weeks, but you know, compared to those two guys and compared to most of the 130 coaches in college football, Kirby Smart's achievements in going on 4 years on the job are magnitudes higher. He's been to the college football playoff. He's won an SEC championship. He's won scores and scores of big games. He actually won a game on Saturday against the number 7 team in the country, Notre Dame. After the loss, Notre Dame stays in the top 10. So if there was ever a coach who could say about questions of why did you not go for a touchdown late in the game and kick a field goal instead, if there was ever a coach who's earned the right to say hashtag I don't care, hashtag armchair quarterbacks, whatever else, it would be Kirby Smart. But Smart did the exact opposite of that when he spoke to reporters yesterday. And by the way, you can see the full video of this at the Dog Nation YouTube page. If you haven't subscribed to Dog Nation on YouTube yet, I would encourage you to do that. Smart, instead, far more candid. The question comes up of, hey, you face some criticism for not going for a touchdown late in the game. You kicked a field goal instead. What's it like to be the guy making that decision? What's it like to have a bunch of armchair quarterbacks, armchair coaches, looking over your shoulder and saying what they would have done in that place? And Kirby Smart, to his credit, gave, I thought, a pretty interesting answer. And what makes Smart different than some other coaches in this respect, I think Georgia fans will like. Here is Kirby Smart going deep on what has been a bit of a hot topic this week. Here's the UGA coach.
Oh, we quality control everything. I mean, we go through that call's unique because we had eternity. I mean, we had a review. So it wasn't like most of those calls are split second where you've already made the decision. I mean, we talked for probably 30 minutes before the game on what we would do on 4th-and-1 or 3rd-and-1 on the goal line. What are our top plays? And then we talked for another 30 minutes of what are our top plays on 4th-and-1, 4th-and-2 out in the field. And we go through that. What is their short yardage defense? What do they do? All that's been talked about so that when that time comes, the decision's already made and I already know what I'm going to do. Now, the only thing that affects that is the ebb and flow of the game. You know, how are you playing defensively? How are you playing offensively? Is it a high-scoring game? Is it a low-scoring game? How many opportunities are they going to get to score? So that's the only thing that would affect that decision other than what you've decided before the game. So we spend a lot of time on that. I meet with the offense about short yards and goal line every week to figure out what we think's good, what we don't think's good, how we feel about our short yardage plan. And guess what you say most of the time? I feel really good about it, right? Because you're optimistic. But you get in the game and you get the ebb and flow and you decide how you think you're going to play those situations. And we did that. We talked about it on the headphones.
Before we get into the substance of what Smart has to say there, let me talk two things about the tone with which Smart addresses that question. There are two things in play there that I think are really important. First of all, Smart seemingly acknowledges that when you're the head coach of Georgia, people are going to question the decisions that you make. You're playing in high-profile games. You have a high-profile job. And Smart, by the way, he answers that question, shows the skin that's thick enough to deal with the pressure cooker that is being the head coach at UGA, where even after a game like Notre Dame, the question's not, did you win? It's how did you win and how impressive were you doing that? Smart shows with his demeanor there that he is totally ready for that kind of pressure cooker and has been essentially since he took the job back in 2016. The other thing that Smart shows there is a self-confidence to say that even though at least, you know, several hundred thousand, if not a million people are going to question my decision, ultimately, this is my decision to make. I'm going to tell you about the thought process that I go through on this, but ultimately, this is going to be my decision. So you see some thick skin from Smart there, and you see a resolve about his own position of being the guy in charge, as the old saying has gone for decades. The buck stops with Kirby Smart, and his demeanor there kind of reflects that. And then you get into the actual substance of that. Do I think Kirby should have gone for the touchdown late in the game? Yeah, I probably do. The fact that Kirby's willing to talk about that right there, though, and kind of go into the process he goes through making that decision, I actually think that's a pretty good thing. And that's going to be a little bit of a theme for our show today. We're going to hear more from Kirby Smart coming up in a moment. That my overall takeaway from having heard what I heard yesterday is that when it comes to the answers facing Georgia, you know, maybe sometimes Kirby Smart's belief on that's not always going to be exactly the same as all of ours might be, or maybe mine in particular might be, or maybe yours in particular might be. But even if the answers differ, it certainly seems like Kirby Smart is asking himself all the right questions, and that is a very good thing. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Georgia United Credit Union. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us, no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we're available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really happy to have you with us, and happy to have Georgia United Credit Union with us as well, because they've got a really cool thing that I want to make sure that you're aware of. This is, for the Georgia fan who likes to have everything, this is sort of the next big thing to have. How about a Georgia Bulldogs debit card from Georgia United Credit Union? There are three different design options to choose from, and it can be yours when you open a free Georgia United checking account with options to earn interest there as well. Of course, there are 19 branch locations located throughout the metro Atlanta area, and up to 100,000 surcharge-free ATMs as well. So Georgia United Credit Union, incredibly, incredibly convenient to access and get do business with, and that's one of the reasons why we like Georgia United Credit Union so much. Also, if you want to learn more about the Georgia Bulldogs debit card from Georgia United Credit Union, a great website to go to is GUCU.org/GoDogs. That's GUCU.org/GoDogs. You can find out more about the Georgia Bulldogs debit card and find out more about what makes Georgia United Credit Union unique and better and a great, great company to do some business with. It's so much more than a bank. It's going to help you get all your finances in order and take really good care of you. So check out Georgia United Credit Union. It's great to have them today as a part of Dog Nation Daily. We've got our buddy Mike Griffith here coming up in just a minute. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse. Today, brought to you by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And here with our doghouse, I want to hear more from Kirby Smart just for a moment. As I said before, going deep, being a little bit introspective on some of the issues that seem to come out of the game against Notre Dame on Saturday, a win to be celebrated, some questions to be asked, some topics to be debated coming off of that. And I thought one of the things in particular that Kirby Smart addressed yesterday that sounds very, very similar to something I've heard from a lot of UGA fans going back to Saturday night is that Georgia's obviously got a game plan. We know what the nucleus of this offense is. We know it wants to run the football. We know it's built itself around a big offensive line. Opposing defenses know that as well. What happens then? What's the counterpunch to a defense that tries to stop the thing that is your bread and butter, the thing that you do so well? You're going to like this from Kirby Smart. Here's the coach again.
What can we do to get the ball to our playmakers in space? How can we do it better? How can we find plays to get guys on the perimeter and loosen some teams up, throw the ball downfield, find ways to get George the ball? I mean, it's limitless that what we're trying to do. But those are the central focus, is protect Jake, let him throw the ball vertical, and let us spread the ball out some and loosen people up. We know our strength is running the ball, but sometimes teams do everything they can to take that away, and you got to have answers.
Now, admittedly, there's an aspect of that that's easier said than done, getting vertical, getting horizontal, spreading teams out so they don't just stack the box and stop the run. But once again, the fact that Georgia's acknowledging that coming off of Saturday, maybe not as much of that as there could have been, I think if you're a dog fan, I think you take that as a pretty good thing, and I think it becomes a pretty good measuring stick for how you measure this program going through the rest of the season. Do they evolve offensively when the running game is, at least in the early portion of the game, being stymied? Do they have an evolution that allows all of a sudden Jake Fromm to have a little bit more freedom to do some of the things that he truly does best? And how about some of the things that Notre Dame was doing defensively against Georgia this past Saturday? In some cases, playing some games with the defensive line there along the line of scrimmage, kind of slanting in some of the gaps and trying to, use speed to kind of counterbalance the overwhelming size the Georgia offensive line brought to the table. Once again, Kirby Smart pretty candid in talking about how teams like Notre Dame choose to defend the Georgia running game and ultimately the price they could pay for playing the way they choose to play. Here's more from Kirby Smart.
That affects them. Because when you move, you get washed. So, slanting and angling is like rolling the dice a little bit. It's just, I've seen a lot of slant angle teams that got mashed, by us. It usually works early and it usually wears out later. And that's kind of what took effect. We were much more capable of running the ball as the game transpired than as the game started. And I think if you look over the history of our program, that's been the case. We're more efficient running the ball later in the game.
Which kind of goes back to that keep chopping mentality that Smart's talked about for a while. And, certainly it seemed like Georgia was asserting itself with the running game a little bit more late in the game. However, I think Georgia fans also like the idea of what Smart said with his earlier statement, which is that, hey, in addition to that keep chopping mentality where the running game wears you down over the course of a game, also be aggressive and make teams pay for selling out to stop that run. Either way, to hear Smart be as candid as he was yesterday, I thought was a pretty interesting thing. It's Around the Doghouse. It's presented by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And by now, you've been hearing me talk about ESOG for a long time. A solutions-based company. That means that when there's a simple, easy fix to the waterproofing issue or foundation issue that you're facing, Engineered Solutions of Georgia will give you that simple fix for that. But let's face it, some things, especially when it comes to the foundation of your home, they can be a little bit more complicated to fix. And if that be the case, you want to trust my friends at ESOG because they have two full-time engineers on staff. Now, they also have something else really cool I want you to know about, a fully transferable triple protection warranty, which is on materials, installation, design. That is a great, great deal. So the best way for you to get in touch with my friends at ESOG, if you're having any kind of waterproofing issue, you got water coming in your basement or even like a damp space in your crawl spot, or excuse me, a damp spot in your crawl space, those can be signs of a bigger problem. That's why you want to at least get a consultation from ESOG. So get in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now, and you can get in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. All right, it's great to have you this here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union. We'll hear more from Kirby Smart a little later on in our program. Some very candid words from him assessing what went right and maybe what still needs improvement coming off the game against the Fighting Irish this past Saturday. But for now, on more of that, more of what's happening during the bye week in Athens, let's talk to Mike Griffith here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Mike Griffith there yesterday as Kirby Smart met with reporters, got a chance to see a little bit of practice too as some Georgia players try to get their way back on the mend and get ready for Tennessee coming up in 2 weeks' time. Before that, still a lot to kind of dive into looking back at the game against the Fighting Irish. And I guess, you know, Mike, let me just kind of start open-ended here, and then we'll just kind of see where it goes from there. What's your overall takeaway from having seen Georgia versus Notre Dame on Saturday?
I think that I saw a lot of good and I saw a lot of bad. I mean, I saw a lot of guys respond, and I saw some other personnel that didn't respond. Kind of a mixed bag, B.A. I'll be honest. I thought Georgia was further along, but at the same time, Notre Dame was better than I expected. And Notre Dame played with passion and fire, and I've got to give Notre Dame credit. I mean, I didn't think there was any way that game could live up to the 2017 game, and I suppose it's up for debate whether or not it did, but I thought it was just an incredible game, an incredible environment. I'll tell you, it's one of the most memorable football games I've ever been around, certainly one that I've ever seen in person. So I'm more impressed with Kirby Smart after yesterday, though, and I think you hit the nail on the head, as you always seem to do on Dog Nation Daily. I thought Kirby's transparency to me is extremely encouraging, and I'm really impressed by the tact he's taken. I mean, he's saying the same things the fans are, basically.
Well, and it doesn't necessarily mean that every fan's going to agree with every aspect of everything that he said yesterday, but the fact that he's as open as he was about his thought process, the fact that he, you know, to me, you know, kind of left the door open for high-profile coach, big-time game, there are going to be, you know, decisions questioned. The fact that Smart doesn't run from that, I at least think that's a really good thing. Now, there is an aspect of some of what he said that's easier said than done. When he says, hey, we want to stretch the field more vertically, we want to get, you know, spread teams out and, you know, kind of, he didn't say this, I'm going to paraphrase, you know, punish teams for wanting to stack the box and stop the run. You know, certainly it's easier to say you want to do that than it is to go out there and actually execute that. But the fact that that Smart even addressed those topics, so similar to what people have been saying in our comment section the last couple of days, I will say, speaking here strictly as a fan for a moment, I took that as a really good sign.
Absolutely. And the biggest revelation to me, and the most encouraging thing if you're a Georgia fan, because let's face it, that offense looked shaky in the first half. It did. It looked shaky. And Kirby explained it. He said, hey, here's what happened, guys. I mean, paraphrasing. We weren't getting the plays in time for Jake to make the play call at the line of scrimmage. And Eric Zier said it, and I got a story up on Dog Nation right now, but Eric Zier, might as well be a fortune teller. He's pretty much told us exactly what's going to happen through the first four games back in July. But he said the biggest weapon is Jake Fromm and his ability to make plays at the line of scrimmage. And Kirby revealed that the play calls were getting in late. And so Jake wasn't able to make those adjustments at the line of scrimmage. And, B.A., that changes everything for me. Because I'm thinking, what I'm seeing here doesn't match what I saw before. And why? And it's because Jake didn't have the time to get them into the right play call. And so what you saw would have been akin to a young quarterback who couldn't make changes. Instead of seeing the savvy third-year veteran in Jake Fromm, who always seems to find the right play for the right occasion. And so that explained a lot to me. And I really appreciated that Kirby was transparent about it today. It's something we got to do better. And if I was a Georgia fan, boy, I whatever concerns you would have, I would exhale right now and say that explains a lot.
Well, be that as it may, one of the other things I thought that Smart said was interesting yesterday, and he kind of did this in an unsolicited manner, which makes it even more interesting, is he did mention George Pickens by name. And, you know, Pickens does get targeted a couple times, and, you know, certainly plenty of fans are going to say that, you know, he may have been pass interfered on at least one of those that obviously would change the tone of how Pickens' involvement ultimately looked. But one way or another, Pickens doesn't record a catch and wasn't targeted a ton. The fact that Kirby also mentioned Pickens by name yesterday in kind of an unsolicited fashion, saying we need to get, you know, George the ball more, or at least try to get him the ball more, I kind of found that to be somewhat interesting too, because that also is reflective a little bit of a fan opinion. It would be very easy for Kirby Smart, and you can cite plenty of examples in the past where this kind of has happened, to be very easy for Smart to kind of, you know, downplay a freshman in particular and say, hey, listen, we got a lot of guys, and you know, it's different guys, you know, whatever the defense dictates, blah, blah, blah. You know, Smart's only done some of that kind of stuff in the past. But the fact that he did mention Pickens by name yesterday when he didn't necessarily have to, that also kind of caused me to raise a bit of an eyebrow.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I think George Pickens has more upside from a talent standpoint than any receiver in the SEC. And I know those guys at Alabama run really fast and run away from people, but George Pickens is doing some amazing things. We've seen it with our eyes. You trust your eyes. The head coach knows it. And here's the thing. In the game, in the flow of the game, you know, same thing with, like, the Zamir White comment when he said, you know, you need to get some air. In the flow of the game, sometimes you don't think to get this guy in there because you're, you know, it was the type of game where every snap counted. You know, there wasn't the thought of, you know, how many times have we thrown at George Pickens so far? How many times have we given this to James Cook in the open field? As Amir White gotten in the game, it was kind of a breathless game, really, where Georgia really didn't have much time to breathe. So I think this is all hindsight, and as Kirby says, you know, quality control when they go back and look at things. But, yeah, there shouldn't be another game where George Pickens isn't targeted, you know, more than twice. I mean, I got to believe he should be targeted three or four times every game minimum, and you got to think James Cook's going to touch the ball more than once in a contest.
So you mentioned Pickens in comparison to the Alabama receivers. Here's the one thing I will say about that. You know, the one thing that even in a small sample size, and I think it's very important to be very clear about this, Pickens' college career is an extraordinarily small sample size for the moment. But in the small sample size, the one thing we've seen from him is he's got ball skills. He uses his body really well. But in comparison to some of the top Alabama receivers, the one thing they do bring to the table is speed. And if you're watching these Alabama highlights on Saturday night or just watching the game when it's really happening, you see on those slant patterns and things like that, those Alabama receivers run away from defensive backs. I think the more that Pickens plays here his freshman season, I think one of the important questions that's going to be asked and answered in terms of does Pickens live up to what some of the other freshman receivers around college football have done the last couple of years is how he accounts for that. Because if you want to go back to the recruiting trail, measurably, you know, Pickens' 40 time wasn't going to be as high as some of the other guys around college football. I think it should be well documented what kind of prospect I think Pickens is going to be. But in a game, you know, what does that end up looking like? You know, how does he account for what, you know, certain guys in the SEC has, which is probably a little bit more of kind of a track star type speed? I do think that's going to be an interesting thing to observe from Pickens going through the rest of the season.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, you've got to have that speed component. A lot of these guys grow. I mean, King McIntosh was supposed to be slow too, and yet if you, you know,
Hold on, Mike. I didn't say slow. I said less fast and the fastest receiver in the SEC. But right. By all means, please continue.
Right. Well, Kenny McIntosh wasn't supposed to be as fast as others either, and yet, you know, the metrics at Georgia have shown something else since he's been on campus. So guys grow. But B.A., what I like about Pickens isn't necessarily the track star speed. It's the body control in the hands. And to me, You know, he's making catches that I see guys on Sunday making. And, you know, Georgia showed how you could set down those Alabama receivers for a few quarters, and that was at the college level. So we could go back and forth, but those guys are absolutely proven. I'm not trying to take anything away from Alabama's receivers or deny their skills and talents. I just know that what I see in George Pickens defies my eyes as far as what I've ever seen from a freshman receiver. And obviously the head coach feels the same way. I think Dominic Blaylock is another guy that should get more touches. I was disappointed that he was only targeted twice, and I was disappointed that he wasn't used in the punt return right off the bat. But, you know, these are things that Kirby Smart's going to address during the bye week. I think there's a ton of positives moving forward to come out of this game, even though that may not have been Georgia's best game. The fact that the head coach is checking off all these boxes and telling us exactly what needs to be fixed, and it's in line with, I think, what most of us saw, you know, to me is really encouraging. You know, because some coaches get in denial. You wonder, are they going to be stubborn? Or are they afraid to change? And Kirby Smart's a guy that says, if it ain't broke, make it better. And I just love that slogan.
So you mentioned Zamir White. That does come up yesterday as well. And, you know, Smart's answer kind of dovetails to some of the things we've been talking about on our program for the last couple of days. I thought John Stinchcomb, the former UGA All-American, said this in a really interesting way right now. And this is not what I would have thought the season was going to be playing out like for Georgia. You know, I made the case prior to the start of the season that I thought that Georgia might be more of an ensemble of running backs this year than it had been before, where, you know, an even distribution of carries maybe among three guys would take place. But on Saturday, as John Stinchcomb said, DeAndre Swift was the guy. And right now, Kirby seemingly has a great deal of trust in Swift, seemingly for good reason. And at the moment, the additional carries for Swift are kind of coming at the expense of Zamir White. And obviously, I'm like a lot of other fans, so you'd like to see White on the field more and see him get his chance. And I'm sure before the year's done, we'll get a chance to do that. But certainly Smart's reasoning of this right now can't really be debated too much. That DeAndre Swift gave Georgia a little bit of a hero performance, even though the overall numbers didn't look that great in terms of the final rushing yards. The individual rushes themselves were pretty big time. And if that's the reason why White's not playing more, then I don't think that Georgia fans have too much room to squabble with that.
Yeah, I think Connor Riley's done a couple of really good stories on this. Yeah, I think right after the game, Connor had a story on DeAndre, and then this morning in his What We Learned piece, I thought Connor really kind of canvassed that pretty well. And I would agree with that. Here's the thing, though. You know, DeAndre didn't break a run longer than 15 yards. I'm not denying the effort. And again, I'm going to give Notre Dame credit because I think that's the best tackling team I've seen since 2017 Georgia. I was really impressed with the Irish's open field tackling. It defies the numbers. I don't know how they ranked 120th in the nation in run defense coming in, regardless of what type of run game they were facing. So a lot of credit to Notre Dame. But, you know, Georgia didn't have any explosive plays running the football. You know, 16 yards was the longest run. To me, that's not a pass. To me, I'm not going to call it a fail, but that's not a pass to me. They did secure the ball, but I would have been okay with James Cook touching the ball more than once. To me, that was also egregious. When you've got a playmaker like that, and Kirby addressed that, you know, getting the ball in space. I mean, I don't know, but I wonder how much of that BA had to do with Cook lining up more in the slot because of the injuries, and I wonder if that took him a little bit out of the backfield a little bit. But I would have liked to have seen Cook get a crack, or Zamir, maybe even Kenny, because I don't know if these guys can break the long run against Notre Dame and somebody sees something a little different, but that offense was searching a little bit, I thought.
Let me finish up with this. I don't know where this came from, but I guess some UGA fans were a little surprised. You didn't like the light show on Saturday? I'm not sure where this is coming from, but a few people had asked me to ask you about this, that you weren't happy with the light display, the red lights and the flashing stadium lights on Saturday. Where is that coming from? I'm not too sure about that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I didn't like it. What I said is I'm not sure I like it during the game. And I think we're probably going to see, not because it's my rule, but I think we may see something about doing that during the course of play. It struck me that you went from flashing strobe lights right to the lights turned up and playing football again within a minute and a half. And I don't know, I guess the NHL does that a little bit. I love the light show. Don't get me wrong. I think those lights are amazing. I got on my Facebook page. I've got a picture of it on my Facebook page. It was such an incredible setting to see those red lights. But
not that close to play, not during play. I think I'm a pregame, a postgame, a halftime, maybe, you know, but I don't know about doing it during timeouts and things like that. I wondered if that detracted or if it affected. I mean, I that was my question. I kind of want to see the football game, and my thought was it too close to the playing time? Not was it a good show? It was a hell of a show. I think it's great George did it, and I think it's something everybody should be proud of. But I'm just not sure if we're going to see it again, 30 seconds before they leave the sideline for a play.
So just to follow up on that, shouldn't Georgia do everything that it can to create a home field advantage, though?
Oh, and did they ever? But it had more to do with the noise. You know, it's funny. I'm working on a story right now on Havoc, great BA.
Yeah.
And Kirby can include those 5-yard penalties that the crowd was causing. I mean, there was 6 Havoc plays right there coming from the Georgia fan base when you think about it. They cost Georgia 5 yards, and I don't know what value you put on burning a timeout, but if you want to call that a Havoc play, that's 9 Havoc plays that the Georgia – I think Georgia should print up T-shirts and say, I created Havoc for all the fans. I'm serious. They did. They created Havoc. They created play loss, lost yardage, and down-and-distance situations just like a sack on a first down or just like a pass breakup. I mean, they affected Notre Dame greatly. So, that was my impression. And I was, the fans sometimes I roll my eyes, not at Georgia, but just in general with fans and say, oh, we got the greatest home crowd. We're the best. Everybody says they're the best. But you know what? Georgia fans really proved it. I mean, they really, really did make a difference. I mean, if you were in that game, you were a part of that victory. Because I contend that if there's not 6 false starts and 3 burn timeouts, I'm not sure that Georgia wins. I saw the crowd make a difference. And I can't point to another game where I would say the crowd has had that much impact in all my years of covering college football at any level, any playoff game, any championship game, anywhere. I've never seen a crowd make the impact that Georgia did. I can't believe I'm saying it because but it happened. It happened right before my eyes.
Well, there you go. Mike, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate you being here. We'll look forward to reading more from you at DogNation.com. And thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union today.
Thanks, BA.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
I mean, yeah, listen, I mean, my rule on something like this is just as simple and straightforward as it can be. If it's bothering Notre Dame, then good. And I don't say that just as a Georgia partisan, but just in college football in general. I mean, how many years has Georgia been going up to Columbia, South Carolina, for instance, that rooster crow playing and, cock-a-doodle-doodling all the way to the snap? I mean, teams have been looking for that whatever home field advantage they can get for quite some time, and this is just the next iteration of that in my mind. And, ultimately it's the crowd noise that's the bigger impact on Notre Dame. But certainly the likes seem to egg on the crowd a little bit, and I don't mind that. It's part of the reason why Alabama fans have been pouting so much this week, because Georgia got a chance to put this show on first. It's a Dog Nation Daily presented by Georgia United Credit Union. We got some SEC stuff to do. Then we're going to hear more from Kirby Smart before we're done here today. Before that, let me also remind you about my friends at MyBookie. Great time to get involved with MyBookie. This weekend there's no Georgia game to watch. Sometimes you tune into the other games. You don't really have much of a rooting interest one way or another. Get a little action down on one side or the other. You better believe I have some rooting interest in. That's a fun way to do it, and MyBookie's a great place to do that with. They're going to give you a big first deposit bonus. They may double your first deposit. You can get up to $1,000. But you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION. It's all one word. Spelled the way it's supposed to be. DAWG. The promo code DOGNATION. Get you in at MyBookie. You just type that into your browser. MyBookie. You search MyBookie. You find it. Use the promo code DOGNATION. Get a big-time first deposit bonus. And then after that, you play, you win, you get paid. They've also got great player perks. They've got opportunity to kind of, you can do some fantasy stuff like betting over, under fantasy points, teasers, parlays, all the stuff you'd expect. It's there at MyBookie, but you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION. All right. I've gotten a lot of Twitter stuff about this over the last couple of days, so apparently this is turning into a little bit of a thing. I knew it was going to be certainly talked about, and there's obviously a lot of Georgia fans excited about going to Neyland Stadium next Saturday. I guess there's also kind of a desire. You know how Tennessee has, done the checkerboard thing before? Some Georgia fans are thinking if they get enough fans in the stadium, they can also do a red and black version of the checkerboard there at Neyland Stadium. If you're watching on video, I've gotten a few of these lately. Here is one from our buddy Sugar Ray And what I like about Sugar Ray's red and black checkerboard of Neyland Stadium, first of all, how much time does this take? This is pretty amazing. Great job by Sugar Ray. He's also got the Dog Nation logo where the video board at Neyland Stadium would be. He's got a Georgia G right there in the middle. This is a really, really good job by our buddy Sugar Ray. It's Sugar Ray for UGA on Twitter. So good job by him. And I'm guessing we'll see at least 20,000 Georgia fans in Knoxville. Is that at least 20,000, right? And they were 20 grand in LSU last year. So there'll be at least 20,000 fans in Knoxville. Is it enough to checkerboard the stadium? I don't quite know about that, but I wouldn't, I guess, put it past right now. Now, speaking of Tennessee, reports coming out of a couple of Vols players entering the transfer portal. Shannon Reed, Jacquez Jones doing that. There's also been some rumors here of some others going in as well. And some of the names, and I'm not going to mention them here because it's unfounded. It's just rumors. But some of the names I've heard kicked around also potentially considering transfers. These are names you might know a little more of and might be a little bit more aware of. And, you know, we are in that kind of like four-game threshold of college football where guys are thinking about that. And there's some, you know, there's some debate going on about should I stay and should I go. And programs like Tennessee right now that are kind of having fallen on the hardest of times, they're going to deal with that more. So keep your eye out for Knoxville and what kind of what comes out of that. Couple names reportedly enter the transfer portal. There might could be more on the way. I saw this, and I mentioned this. This is also kind of an unfounded rumor, but a guy with a blue check tweeted it, so I guess it's got to be worth something. Brenton Cox in Gainesville. Can I see this for a second? It's a TV guy there. It's Ben Murphy, local TV guy, I believe from Jacksonville, who says rumblings of Brenton Cox getting cleared to play flowing on the internet machine today. Now, I'm not so sure if you're Ben Murphy, if that's going to be the, you know, the source for a news report. I'm only mentioning it because he did. I don't think there's anything to this. I don't think, because certainly there have not been any more substantial reports coming out of Gainesville on this. In fact, I believe there was one report at least from a local Florida reporter that Cox was still working scout team right now, which would mean if he was on his way to being cleared, he probably would not be doing that. So I'm not quite sure how that rumor got started at once, but it was big enough anyway that a local TV guy down there was talking about that, but I'm not quite so sure there's anything to that. I cited yesterday some information from a guy named Brian Fremo. He also had something else on Twitter yesterday that I wanted to point out. So the way these analytics guys work is they take, you know, yards per play, points per drive, things like that, and they kind of sort of, you know, stir that up into a formula. It becomes kind of an efficiency rating for various teams. And when you compare one team's efficiency to another, you end up with a pretty good prediction of win-loss record. These things are normally pretty close to the end of the season win-loss record with some variance, and sometimes it can be, you know, a great deal of variance, but it's at least a pretty good measuring stick for how teams are expected to do. And Brian Fremo tweeted out from Football Outsiders a reminder that despite the fact that Auburn's currently undefeated and Florida's still currently undefeated, they, along with a handful of other teams, are still, according to the analytics, the number crunchers, still expected to lose at least three games before the end of the season. Actually, it's like 3 point something, so more than three games. So pretty fast start here for Auburn, but the analytics folks think they still have tough games to come. Florida much the same way, and that's not too different from what our predictions would be there as well. Just kind of wanted to point that out. And then one more thing on our SEC through as a follow-up to yesterday. I saw an interesting statement from, is it Derek King, the quarterback from Houston, who is taking a red shirt, and we kind of openly speculated yesterday of, is he about to be a hot free agent, much the same way Kelly Bryant would have been leaving Clemson a year ago, King leaving Houston. He did come out with a strongly worded statement, basically pledging his loyalty to Houston, saying, teams may come after me, but I'm not going anywhere. He also said, I can't go anywhere, which I'm not quite sure what that means, but he had a very strongly worded statement that said he was staying at Houston. Does this put the rumor to bed that he might be a quarterback that a team in the market for a grad transfer, possibly Georgia, maybe Alabama, some of these other high-profile teams, does that put that to bed that he could be one of those guys? I would say anything is possible in college football, so I'm not quite so sure that statement closes the door on this, but it was interesting to hear him be as strongly worded about that as he was. We'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union, I want to turn our attention back to Kirby Smart here just for a moment. And I was playing some audio a little earlier. I want to get to the fake injury thing in a minute. Before we get to that, though, I was playing some audio earlier here of Kirby Smart kind of candidly addressing some of the topics, some of the issues that fans had had, not necessarily critical of Kirby Smart on, but just curious about. And I think one of those curiosities was, hey, late in the game when you have a lead, do you go for the kill? You know, do you? And there was at least one national media guy that said Kirby plays it too safe late in the game when he has leads and trying to connect the dots between what happened for Georgia against Notre Dame to some of the recent losses to Alabama in the SEC championship or the national championship game. You can decide for yourself how much merit that has. But it's at least a curiosity forming around Smart this week. You know, are you aggressive enough late in the games? And how do you balance the need to protect the lead, not do something stupid, with – you know, making sure you keep your pedal on the pedal to the metal and fight for the win the entirety of the game? Smart was asked about that, and once again, pretty candid response. Here's Kirby again.
I don't think it's a real tough balance. Depends on what you're doing defensively. Is it 38 to 34 or is it 14 to 10? You know what I mean? There's really two different type games. What kind of quarterback are you playing? Been in a lot of games where I've been on them headphones saying, it ain't ever over. You better score all you can score. You know what I mean? Then I've been in those games before where, you know, like the Auburn one here a couple years ago, that I don't know, 2 years ago or something. I mean, it was neither team could really do anything. And it was a matter of I'm playing to win this game and not have a defense screw it up. So I think you have both those, and you got to go with the flow of the game.
So once again, maybe it's not exactly the answer you'd want from Kirby, but the fact that he's entertaining the question and talking about his thought process publicly, I think is a really good thing. I think this kind of issue is going to hang over Smart's head like it would any high-profile coach, but he's certainly taking the issue head-on. Don't forget, it's flu season, and Kroger's got you covered with your flu vaccination. No appointments needed. That's a good thing, and here's something that's even better. A copay can be as low as $0, so learn more about this by going to Kroger.com/flu. It's Kroger.com/flu. One more thing from Kirby Smart before we get out of here. Another one of the hot topics going back to Saturday was the allegations of Notre Dame faking injuries. Yeah, if you're watching on video, I mean, the video I think speaks for itself that this is clearly an attempt to slow Georgia down and make sure you know make sure you basically stop play here. I think the video speaks for itself. Brian Kelly, I think, has had a pretty insincere attempt at explaining away the actions of his team. Credit to Kirby Smart yesterday for not exactly letting Kelly and the Irish off the hook. Here's Kirby Smart on the topic. Okay, we don't have that, but Kirby did address this yesterday, basically saying it's not his place to say if he thought Notre Dame was faking the injuries or not. He says it does go on in college football, but he certainly didn't take any of the heat off Notre Dame for this. And honestly, this kind of gamesmanship is probably part of the sport, but when it happens against your team, if you're Kirby Smart, I think, and if it gets caught on video, and if it's maybe a coach that you don't mind seeing squirm a little bit, I think the way that Kirby Smart behaved on this yesterday is exactly the way it's supposed to be and exactly the way that he's supposed to do it. So pretty good stuff there from Kirby Smart. If you go to the Dog Nation YouTube page, you can actually hear Smart's answer on that. All right, as we get ready to wrap up here, I wanted to show you this for a moment if you're on video, and I apologize if you're a podcast radio right now. Young Georgia fan named Wright drew me this picture and gave it to me Saturday as part of our Dog Nation Express tailgate. We had such a good time at our Dog Nation Express tailgate. I had a chance to meet so many really nice people. And one of the cool things about my job is I get gifts from time to time. I thought this was a really cool drawing of a Georgia Bulldog and some of the rivals. You see LSU over here, Kentucky, Auburn. I see a Mississippi State Bulldog, a South Carolina Chicken, Vanderbilt Commodore, Georgia Tech. Georgia just kind of vanquishing a lot of its foes here. This is a really cool drawing, and it's going to have a prominent spot for me right there next to some of the other cool things that I've been given by so many of you. And so I really appreciate all of your generosity, right, in particular here today. By the way, it's been 1,061 days since Florida's beaten Georgia. That's our Gator Hater Updater. We think that's good news, and we'll see you tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union.